You're all familiar with the Medrash that when Yosef sends the wagons to his father, he sees the wagons that Yosef sent, and that convinces him that Yosef's still alive, and he remembers what they were learning. There was a hint to Egla Rufa. A few questions. First of all, the Torah says very clearly that Paro sent those wagons, not Yosef. Yosef sent them according to the command of Paro. So what in the world was there a hint to Egla Rufa altogether, because they weren't the wagons that... So there's another medrash that says the wagons that Paro sent had Avodah Zorah engraved on them. Yehuda burnt those wagons, and Yosef sent other wagons. So they're Yosef's wagons. There's only one problem with that. The Torah says clearly they went, when they came, they went in the wagons that Paro sent. So if they were burnt, how did they go in charcoal? Thirdly, even if the wagons were sent by Yosef, where did Yaakov see a hint that Yosef was hinting to him that the last thing they were learning was Egla Rufa? Right? I would understand if Yosef sent him a little miniature calf. That would be a good hint that he remembers the last thing they were talking about was Egla Rufa. Right? Or if he sent him a wagon that had no purpose at all, okay, then he would make the association Egla, Gala are similar. But he sent them the wagons because he needed to move. It's as absurd as saying that if somebody sends somebody a moving truck because he has to move, the truck pulls up and the guy says, I get it, you're trying to hint me that I should have good luck because luck lines with truck, and therefore, this is absurd. So what in the world, because he sent them a wagon, the wagon is an Agola, and Agola sounds like Egla, and oh, wow, Yossi's trying to give me a hint that he remembers what we're learning. What's the connection, Bechlau? In order to understand this whole parsha, I want to start with a lengthy preface, and we'll get back to this parsha eventually. The Rambam says that a person by his very nature is influenced by his environment. Derech b'riyaso shel adam, it is the nature of a human being to be influenced by the environment he's in. If it's a good environment, he's influenced for the good, a bad environment for the bad. Therefore, the Rambam says a person should always strive to be in a good environment and to stay away from a bad environment. It's interesting that the Migdal Oz says, where's the source of this Rambam? How does the Rambam know that it's the very nature of man to be influenced? Maybe it's something that could happen, but it's not part of the nature of man. So he said he learns it from the Gemara that you're all familiar with, maybe not as a Gemara. Ketzad maragdin lefnei akala. How do you dance in front of the kala? So the Gemara says, that Beishamai says, you have to say it as it is. If you think the kala is an ugly witch who has no midos, either if when the chassan says, what do you think of my kala, you have to say, I think she's an ugly witch who has no midos. Or you can stay by the smorgasbord or not choose not to go to the achasana or fill your mouth with food she can't answer. Others say that you don't have to be so blunt. You just say that find something nice about the kala, like her shoes fit very nicely, right? Or you say those words, ah, the kala is as she is, and you think what you mean, and Chassan thinks what he means, and everybody's happy, and nobody said any lies. Beis Hillel says, and we paskin like Beis Hillel, right? Kala nova chasuda. For every kala, you say she's a charming and beautiful kala. So Beis Shammai says to Beis Hillel, you know, you're nice guys, right? You want to be sociable. But what are you doing with the Torah says? You're not allowed to lie. And what if she's taka a ugly witch who has no midos tovos, and you're saying kala nova chasuda? So Beis Hillel answers with a question. What do you say if somebody buys a lemon in the shuk, not a real lemon, but he goes and buys a painting that he expects his wife to put up in the house, right, and it's the most atrocious thing you ever saw. Nobody would hang it with the painting side except towards the wall, right? And the guy asks you, what do you think about the painting? Right? He can't return it because the people who sold it to him have run away happy that they sold one of these paintings. So there's nothing you can do about it. So what should you do? Praise it or tell him the truth? So it's not going to help anything to tell him the truth. You're not going to hurt anybody by telling him that it looks nice. So tell him it looks nice. So too with the kala. The Gemara ends, Mikan omru chachamim la'olam teidaito shalabim l'revesim abrios. From here, the rabbis learn a person should always be sociable. His mind should be mixed in with other people's minds. He should be sociable. It's not going to hurt anybody. Be sociable. That's the simple meaning of the Gemara. According to that meaning, it has no connection at all to this Rambam. But I think the Migdal Oz learned differently. Beis Hillel never answered the question. How could you lie? The answer is that in subjective things, you are definitely by nature influenced by somebody else's opinion. And if this chassan thinks she's a kala nova chasuda, even though you think she's a miyasa machshefa, right, a ugly witch, right, you are influenced by his opinion somewhere. It's natural. It's part of nature, and therefore it's not a lie. And from here, the rabbis learn not that you should always be sociable, but that a person's mind is always mixed in with other people's minds, meaning you're influenced by what other people, by nature. You can't avoid it. Why did God make such a nature? Why did he make us so vulnerable to other people's opinions and so vulnerable to environmental influence? The answer is for the good. Because the only way that we can bring perfection to this world is with a team effort. No one thing is ever perfect. Only the Rabbanu Shlom is perfect. Everything else needs other things to help perfect it. And everything works together towards perfection. So we need to be influenced by other people for the good in order to be able to bring perfection to the world. But everything that can be used for the good, zele umazeh, can be used equally for the bad. So just as much as God put a power of influence for the good, it can be used equally for the bad. In any case, so if, what's it called, if environmental influence is so strong, so how do you avoid it? How do you protect yourself from bad influences? So there's a Meiri who says the following. The evil influences in the world are like the sea, like the ocean. And the way to avoid it is like a boat. Now, on the surface, that Meiri is very difficult because you can't avoid the sea in a boat. A boat can only go on the sea. What he should have said is the evil in the world is like a sea, and the way to avoid it is like an amphibious craft, that you get out of the sea and you go on the dry land. Why do you say it's like a boat? Because the answer is you can't avoid and escape evil influences. They're everywhere. There's nowhere in the world, not in Meisharim and not in New Square and not anywhere, where you can avoid evil influences. They're everywhere. The most you can do is not isolate yourself from them, but insulate yourself from them, like a boat. So the way to protect yourself is through insulation, not necessarily isolation. And what does that mean? That means that even if you live in a world where there are bad influences, you live in an environment, first you should try to pick the best environment you can. But you're never going to be able to avoid negative influences completely. So eventually, when you find the most ideal environment you can find, you have to be able to live within your own personal makom Torah, your own environment. Live amongst the world, but not with it. Amongst the influences that aren't good, but not with them. I always like to illustrate it with an artist's conception of a colony on the moon. If they ever colonize the moon, people aren't going to have to get up in the morning and put on spacesuits or wear them all the time, right, to sleep too. That would be impossible. So what they envision is creating this bubble, plastic bubble, that will have its own atmosphere, its own gravity, its own air pressure, and people will live in that bubble. Every once in a while, they have to go out to the moon for whatever reason, not to put on spacesuits or whatever, but they'll be living in this bubble that's on the moon. It's amongst the moon, but it's not with the moon. That's how a person has to create that bubble of a makom Torah around him, where that's his place, and he's amongst the world, but not with the world. With that, you can understand the following Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says that Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma was traveling, and somebody met him, and he gave him shalom back, and the man asked Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, where do you come from? He said, I come from the city of great Talmidei Chachamim, a lot of Torah. He said, wow, I envy you. I come from a city there's no Torah at all. How would you like to come and live with us in our city? And I'll give you money. We have plenty of money. No limit. Whatever you want. Just come live with us in our place. Now, if you were Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, how do you think you would respond, or what's the proper response? L'chora, you're given an unlimited budget. I would go there, bring a yeshiva, start a, what's it called, a Makom Torah, bring a Beis Yaakov, a Kollel, build Torah there. Isn't that way every Makom Torah ever got built in the world? Bnei Brak wasn't a Makom Torah until the Chazon Ish went there and built a Makom Torah, another Gedolim. And he didn't live in Yerushalayim, which is a Makom Torah. Rav Aaron Kotler, Lakewood, New Jersey, was not a Makom Torah from the time of the Babylonian exile. Right? 100 years ago, 70 years ago, wasn't a Makom Torah. And New York was. But Rav Aaron Cutler left New York, went to Lakewood, and established a new Makom Torah. That's all the new Makom Torahs in the world ever started. So if I was Rabbi Yosef Mikisma, I would think the proper response is, when's the next plane out, right? Give me all the money I need to start all these institutions. I'll build a Makom Torah in your place. What did Rabbi Yosef Mikisma say? You can give me all the money in the world. I'm not only living in a Makom Torah. Seemingly, he's staying where he is, and his Makom Torah, he's not going to go to a new place. Why not? So I think the Mishnah means something different completely. Rabbi Yosef Mikisma didn't like the way that the invitation was worded. Ritzon chashetodr imanu bimkomenu. Do you want to live with us in our place? It's redundant. Live with us, obviously in our place. Live in our place, obviously with us. Why the double? The invitation was, you come and live with us, not amongst us, with us in our place. Rabbi Yosef Mikisma said, if I do that, I'll never make you into B'nai Torah, because we will influence each other to the lowest common denominator. I will live in a Makom Torah, in your place. I'll come to your place, create that bubble. It'll be transparent. You'll be able to look inside. You'll be able to come inside. I'll be very friendly with you, but I won't be your friend. I'll create a Makom Torah that will be amongst you, but not with you, so you'll be able to come and something to look up to, something to be influenced from that Makom Torah. That's how you build a Makom Torah. Not by intermingling with everybody and then everybody reaches the lowest common denominator, but by creating a Makom Torah that's your place amongst but not with. And that's the way we have to live in Galus. We are an Am Levadad Yishkon. We're a nation that dwells apart. In modern Hebrew, the word Badad, bidud, means insulation. We're an insulated nation, not an isolated nation. That purpose we have Eretz Yisrael. That we can live insulated from the rest of the nations of the world in a holy land, not isolated from them. We have connection with them, commerce, whatever, which we'll get to perhaps later. But we're an Am Levadad Yishkon, and we really have no choice. Because if we don't create that insulation, whether we're in Eretz Yisrael or if we're in Galus, we create Mekomos Torah that we live in amongst the Goyim, but not with them. We have our own little bubble amongst them. Shuls and yeshivas and kehilas and Beis Yaakovs and seminaries. Those are the bubbles of Mekomos HaTorah. So that's what Rabbi Yosef Mikisma said. I'll live amongst you, but in the Makom Torah. In the Makom Torah, I'll create amongst you. In any case, so that's why we're an Am Levadad Yishkom. And we have no choice, really. We're like oil, the Medrash says, and the Goyim are like water. We can't mix together. But we can coexist very nicely with the oil floating on the water supporting the oil protecting the water. Beautiful coexistence. But not together, amongst. The oil is floating on the water. There's a surface tension that separates it. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner says we really have no choice. Because either we make Kiddush or the Goy will make Havdalah. Either we sanctify ourselves and in that way insulate and separate ourselves from the non-Jewish world and its values and standards, or the Goy will push us out. Because when you try to mix the oil with the water pressure pushes the oil to the surface. And therefore the Medrash says, we're always going to be badad, we're always going to have to be in that insulated state. If we choose to do it willingly, then we'll read the pasuk, Vayishkon Yisrael Betach Badad. The Jewish people dwell in security, insulated from the rest of the world. That we read on Simchas Torah, great Simcha. That's in Vezos HaBracha. But if we choose not to do it, then we're eventually going to be forced to do it. But we're going to read the pasuk Eicha Yashva Vadad, that we read on Tisha B'Av, sitting on the floor. That's our only really two choices. The result will be, the fact is, we're going to be an insulated nation, separate. But the question is, are we going to do it willingly, in a happy way, or unwillingly, in a very unhappy way? That's the case. So let's go back to the Parsha and understand that, and then take it another step further. Paro wanted very much that Yaakov and the other brothers should come to live in Mitzrayim. I mean, he saw a lot of success in one Jew. He figured, wow, a lot of Jews, this is going to be, you know, my, I hit pay dirt. This is, you know, this is the jackpot. So he wanted Yaakov to come, but he knew that old people don't like to make changes in their life. They don't like to move. They like to be where they were. They're used to the places. So he figured, I will entice Yaakov to come to Mitzrayim. And therefore he told him the following. It says in the Torah this is not my interpretation. This is Psukim in the Torah. He told Yosef, take wagons for your family and bring them here. But don't bring any possessions. No clothing, no... Don't make a yard sale, sell it all off in Israel. Come here just with your family and the shirt on your back. And I will provide you with the best of the land of Egypt. Best clothing, best appliances, best furniture. Why? Because he wanted, in my estimation, this is my interpretation, because he wanted to entice Yaakov to come. He figured, why do people not like to make moves? Why would Yaakov say, I want to stay where I am and not come here? Because you feel uncomfortable, especially old people. Uncomfortable. I don't know the language. I don't have the right clothing. My furniture doesn't fit into the apartment. Right, I plug in my thing. It's 110. This is 220. Nothing works. So Paro said, in thinking this is going to entice Yaakov to come, don't worry. Don't bring anything. I will outfit you here with everything Egyptian. You'll be able to assimilate into the Egyptian culture with ease. So he didn't send wagons for any of their possessions, only for the people. Yosef realized that if he tells his father that, Paro's going to make it easier for you to assimilate. He'll never come in a million years. Just the opposite. He's going to have to feel that there's a chance he's not going to assimilate, a good chance. Otherwise, he's not coming. So Yosef added other wagons for all their possessions. Those are the wagons that Yosef sent. The wagons that Paro sent were the ones they went in, which it says later on, they went in the wagons that Paro sent. What does it mean that Yehuda burnt the original wagons because they were engraved by Avodah Zarah? It doesn't mean literally. The original wagons were wagons that represented assimilation. Wagons for the people and no possessions so they can assimilate. That's Avodah Zarah. When Yosef sent the other wagons, right, he took wagons not according to Paro's command, but according to the spirit of his command, what he wanted to accomplish, and Yehuda took those wagons out of Mitzrayim, it's as if he burnt the Avodah Zarah of the original wagons. Because now they're taking extra wagons for the possessions. The first wagons don't represent assimilation anymore. So he burnt the Avodah Zarah. Not literally, but conceptually. How do I know that Yosef understood this? Because when Yosef introduces his brothers to Paro, and he wants them, he has to coach them until they say the right thing, because they don't know too much about Paro and Mitzrayim, whatever. So he tells them the following. I'm going to leave the blank. You tell me what you would think the blank should be logically, and then we'll see what the Torah says. He says, listen, when Paro calls you and he asks you, what do you do for a living? Say blank. Why? Because the Egyptians abominate shepherds. They get sick to their stomach when they hear about a shepherd because their god is the lamb, the sheep, and they can't stand shepherds who raise sheep to eat. What's it called? It's like disgusting to them. If somebody should raise sheep, raise a god. So it's very sacrilegious to them. It goes against all of their sensitivities. So, therefore, what I would think the Torah would say is, when Paro calls you and asks you what you do for a living, say you're plumbers, you're businessmen, you're stock brokers. Don't mention anything about being shepherds, ever being shepherds. Make sure you take a good shower, put on a lot of cologne, you don't smell from sheep, right? Don't mention you don't even know what a sheep is. Because these people abominate shepherds. You know what Yosef told them to say? When Paro says to you, what do you do for a living? You should say the following. We are shepherds. Not only are we shepherds, our fathers were shepherds. Not only that, our grandfathers were shepherds. We never did anything but be shepherds. Why? In order that you should live in Goshen, because the Egyptians can't stand shepherds. What does that mean? That Yosef understood they're going to have to live in Egypt. They're going to have to live amongst the Egyptians, but not with them. The best thing is, let them put you off in Goshen because they get sick to their stomach when they see that you're shepherds. So the purpose was to insulate them from Mitzrayim. You're going to be in Egypt, but insulated. And Yosef described to his brothers how he saw them coming to Mitzrayim. He said, I'm going to go and tell Paro, Achayu Beisavi, my brothers and my father's household, Bo Asher Be'eretz Canaan, who are in the land of Canaan, Bo Eli, who came to me. Now they already came. How could he say they were in the land of Canaan? They came to him. He should have said they were from the land of Canaan, they came to me. Not Asher Be'eretz Canaan. Not that they're in the land of Canaan. And when he told it to Paro, he took a change and said, my brothers have come from the land of Canaan. But his brothers, he said, you didn't leave Eretz Yisrael. You came lock, stock, and barrel to transport a little bit of Eretz Yisrael and transform it, a little bit of Egypt, into Eretz Yisrael. You're creating an enclave, a Makom Torah that is recreating Eretz Yisrael, lock, stock, and barrel in Mitzrayim. You're like that little bubble on the moon. A little bit of the earth transposed to the moon. It's amongst, but not with. You're still in Eretz Canaan. And it could be that explains why Yaakov sent ahead of him Yehuda to start a Beis Medrash, start a Makom Torah, to create that Makom Torah in Mitzrayim, amongst the Egyptians. The only question is, who was the Rosh Yeshiva? Levi. Why didn't you send Levi to start the Yeshiva? Why Yehuda? Yehuda was the king. Now the answer is, here it wasn't just another yeshiva, but it was like an embassy. An embassy, the American embassy in Israel, is American jurisdiction. If you go to that embassy, you are governed by American law. The Israelis can't touch you unless they have agreements with America of, you know, people being handed over, right? But otherwise, you're in America. It's a little bit of America transposed into Israel. That's what an embassy is all over the world. That's what they created in Goshen. An Israeli embassy in Egypt. But it's Israeli, this is Israel. And we're still in Eretz Israel. We haven't left. We're in the environment of Eretz Israel amongst the Egyptians, not with them. And therefore, for that, you need a king. You need a king to create that embassy. So therefore, what happened is the following. Yosef added those wagons for the possessions in order to entice Yaakov to come, unlike Paro thinking that if he'll be able to assimilate, he'll come. Yosef knew that if he is guaranteed he won't assimilate, he'll come. Not other any other way, in any case. So therefore, what's it called? This was the hint to Eglah Rufa. Right? Why? Where's the hint? Like we said, I mean, Lemaisa, okay, Yosef sent the wagons, but where's the hint at a wagon to Eglah Rufa? So first you have to know, how did the rabbis know that the last thing Yaakov and Yosef were studying was Eglah Rufa? What, they had some kind of Mesorah? Says the Balei HaTosfos, Dazakenim, very simple. Anybody could figure it out, that was the last thing they were learning. Why? What happened? The last contact Yaakov had with Yosef is he sent Yosef to see what's doing with the brothers. So the last thing he said to him is, goodbye. After you say goodbye, you have to escort the person out of the house on his way. That's part of a halacha of levaya, of escorting a person. You can't just say goodbye to some person and let him go. You have to escort it part of the way. Minimum 4 amas. Sometimes to the end of the city limits, whatever. So, if you were Yosef and your father started escorting you out of the house, what would you say? No, Dad, don't bother. It's okay. And if you were Yaakov, what would you answer? No, it's not okay. It's a very important halacha that you must escort somebody. And Yosef said, yeah, where did we learn that from? He said, from Eglah Rufa. Because if you find a dead body, and you don't know who murdered him, so you measure to the closest city, and the Beis Din of that city brings a calf, which they behead from the back, and the Beis Din washes their hands over this dead calf, and they say, we didn't spill this blood. So the Gemara says, did anybody really think that the Beis Din were the murderers? That they have to proclaim they didn't? Ella, we didn't see him, and let him go without giving him food and drink for the way, and an escort. Because if we did, we didn't give him an escort, and we didn't give him food and drink, then we're partially responsible for his murder. So I understand if you didn't give him food and drink, right? The guy, what's it called, maybe starved to death, or maybe he couldn't go any further, and therefore he was vulnerable. But you didn't escort him 4 amas. How's that going to help that 20 miles later somebody murdered him? You don't have to take him with an armed guard to where he's going. Just give him a little escort. How does a little escort help? Says the Maral. A person who's alone has to depend on his own merits. And nobody has enough merits to survive. But when you're connected to other people, then you have more merits. You have merits of other people. So when somebody walks with the person, even 4 amas, he attaches himself to that person mentally. And even if he stops walking physically, but he's going with the person mentally, and he's attached now to other people, he has more merit. And that should have protected him from being murdered. And if he didn't have that, then maybe the reason he was murdered is because he didn't have all that extra merit that he could have had you accompanied him. What do you see from there? That a person is not necessarily where he is physically, but where he wants to be mentally. And if I want to go along with you, I started escorting you, and my mind is with you, it's as if I'm with you. Therefore, that's what Yosef hinted with the wagons. The wagons to bring all the possessions. Yaakov was told the story. You know, Paro originally only gave us wagons for the people. He wanted to outfit us with everything Egyptian so we should assimilate. And Yosef sent other wagons that we shouldn't assimilate. We should create an enclave of Israel in Egypt. What does that mean? That you're where your mind is. You're still in Eretz Israel, even though physically you're in Mitzrayim, you're considered like you're in Eretz Israel. That's why it says that Shul, Bate Knesios, Bate Midrashos, in Chutz Laretz, are like Eretz Israel. Because that is the standards and the values and the insulation that Eretz Israel provides, those places, those Mekomos HaTorah provide. And if you live in those places, insulated, then it's as if you're in Eretz Israel. Your mind is in Eretz Israel, even though your body is in Chutz Laretz. And to add to it, why is a wagon called an agola? Because it's pulled by an egla. Because it's pulled by a calf. But why isn't the opposite? A wagon has another name. It's called a caron. Why isn't a calf called a corona? Because it pulls a wagon with a caron. Why is the wagon named for the thing pulling it rather than the thing pulling it named for the wagon? The answer is because something is judged by where it's going, not where it is. And if the egla is pulling it, then the wagon is pulled along and the name is pulled along. You are not where you are where you'd like to be. If you live in Eretz Yisrael, but your mind is in Chutz Laretz, you're in Chutz Laretz. And if you live in Chutz Laretz, your mind is in Eretz Yisrael, you're in Eretz Yisrael. You can be in Golus. But if your mind is focused on what the standards and values of Eretz Yisrael, then you can create that little enclave, that little embassy in Chutz Laretz, as if you're in Eretz Yisrael. That is what this parsha is. And it says, there's a medrash that says, "L'mishpichol sehem yotzu min ateva." Mikan she yotzu mi beis hakneses mishpachos mishpachos. That it says by Noach's teva that they left the teva l'mishpichol sehem by family. From here we have a hint that when you leave shul, you should leave by family. What's the simple meaning of the medrash? The word teva means Noah's ark. But in the Mishnah, the teva was the Aron Kodesh. The Aron Kohal, over lifnei ateva, is the chazan who stands in front of the Aron Kodesh. On a tainus, you brought the teva outside into the Rechov Ha'ir. Teva is the Aron Kodesh. In English, that connection is preserved. Because we have Noah's Ark, and we have the Holy Ark. So they're both arks. So what it means is, they left the Ark by family. So when you leave the Ark, you leave Shul, you should also leave by family. What's the deeper meaning? Like we said, there's flood waters everywhere. The only way to escape them is to get into a boat, get into an ark that's watertight, that won't let the water in. You can't isolate yourself, you can only insulate yourself. So, and how do you leave, but you can't stay, so the same thing. You have to be in an ark to avoid the flood waters of evil and negative influences. What is that ark? Yeshivas. Girls' schools, seminaries, kehillas, shuls, right? Wherever they are in Kodesh, wherever the Torah is. But you can't live in a yeshiva your whole life. You can't live in a shul your whole life. You can't even live in a seminary your whole life. So how do you leave and not be inundated? The answer is they're lifeboats that have the same qualities as the mothership, but they're lifeboats. What's a lifeboat? That's what it says. When you can leave the teva, you can leave the shul, if you create a lifeboat called a mishpacha, a family, that has the same standards and values as the kehillah, as the yeshiva, as the seminary, you have to be able to create within your family those lifeboats also that pattern themselves after the tevas, after the arks of Mekomos HaTorah. However, with all of that said, and this is what I want to add for this year, everything I've said until now, I've said in the past. Now I'm going to tell you, first time, you're the first people that I'm using you as guinea pigs to hear what... Avadai, right, a person, what's it called, has to insulate himself or whatever. And we are now between Hanukkah, the last few minutes of Hanukkah, and next week is what's it called, is Asara B'Teves. Hanukkah represents the ability to continue on that light of the menorah, which is the positive influence, and make it in your home. Make your home a mishkan, right? Because it says ner ishu beso. The ner of Hanukkah is with a home, like we said. L'mishpech oseim, it's the family, the home, that now can carry on the light of the menorah, which is the light of Torah, which is that teva, which creates your lifeboat of your home. Even in Golis. Okay, we have a connection to the mikdash, to the what's it called, to the that ultimate teva through Hanukkah. Hanukkah gives us the ability to withstand the influences of Greece, which is basically the influences of the secular world. On the other hand, on the other side is Asara B'Teves, which was the beginning of all Golis, except for Mitzrayim. Right, the beginning of all the Golios was when they made a seizure on Yerushalayim before the destruction of the first temple. And all the other destructions, that was the seeds, that was the beginning. The first thing that led to breaking the siege, burning the Beis HaMikdash, being exiled from the land when they killed Gedaliah. So the four fast days, the first one is Asara B'Teves in chronological order. So we are, and besides Asara B'Teves, next week there are two other fast days that used to be, which we don't fast on those days anymore. One marks the death of Ezra. Ezra was the one who took us out of the first Golus, brought us back to Eretz Yisrael, and was able to create the environment where we wouldn't be affected anymore. He died. That protection is gone. And the second fast day was on the eighth day of Teves. The ninth day was when Ezra died. The eighth day was when he translated the Torah into Greek. And then it wasn't just amongst, but then we were with. And the Greeks felt shoulder to shoulder, we share your Torah. And that already is extremely dangerous. So we have on one side Hanukkah, the ability to carry on that Makom Torah even into Golis in the home. And on the other side is the other end of the spectrum, Golis, Asara B'Teves, or whatever. So the truth is that Yaakov himself was very afraid to go into Golis because he was afraid of this, that they would assimilate. And many Jews have assimilated because of Golis. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him that he'll go with him into Golis. Anochi eired imcha, and I'll bring you back. In other words, anybody who wants to avail themselves of feeling God's presence and making a enclave of Kedusha in Chutz Laretz, I'm going with you. So it's not impossible to create an enclave of little Eretz Yisrael, little embassy, wherever you are in Chutz Laretz, and create beautiful kehilos that have a din of Eretz Yisrael, because you've created that bubble amongst the nations of the world. Amongst, but not not with. The Meshech Chochma says even prophecy can continue in Chutz Laretz if you started it in Eretz Yisrael. So if this is you see Golis as a continuation of Eretz Yisrael, then you can even have prophecy there. If you see it as something new, not a continuation, there's no more prophecy. The Rebbeinu Shem is not with you. Whatever. And that's why it says that Yaakov Avinu, after he heard this, he brought shlomim, he brought peace offerings to the God of Yitzchak, his father Yitzchak. Why specifically Yitzchak? Because Yitzchak is Midas Adin. He realized that Midas Adin says we're going to have to go into Golis. And not only that, Yitzchak was the only Av who never left Eretz Israel. We're taking that Midah of Yitzchak and we're transporting it to Chutz Laretz. We also never left Eretz Israel. We've left physically, but our mind is still in Eretz Yisrael, like we're still there. So he used that midah, and why shlomim? Because he realized that even though it's a midah sadin, and it's not ideal, but because Klal Yisrael could not remain in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis HaMikdash, because they abused it, right, they had to go into Golis, and in Golis, shlomim means perfection. we can reach the perfection that we couldn't reach in Eretz Yisrael through the means of Golus. It's not only not going to be negative, it could be very, very positive. It's Golus that created Talmud Bavli. And there's a Medrash that says, a Gemara. The Gemara says that Shvur Malka, the Persian king, once chided Shmuel, and he said to him, you know, your Mashiach's taken a long time to come. It's probably because his donkey is very slow. Maybe if I give him one of my fast white steeds, he'll come faster. He was making fun of him. So Shmuel said to him, you probably could give me a much faster horse for Mashiach to ride, but that horse wouldn't have the beautiful colors of Mashiach's donkey. And I saw somebody explain that to me, that yes, we have to go into Galus, and the Galus is long, but every place in Galus gives us something positive that we can learn from the Goyim that we'll bring back. Those are the colors of Mashiach's donkey. In fact, the Mishnah Eliyahu says that when we're in Galus, so the Hashpah, the influence, doesn't come directly from God. It comes through the angels of each country. And therefore, the Avodas Hashem of each country has a little bit of the flavor of the Goyim that are around. For instance, in Germany, right, Yekisha Yiddishkeit was very precise, you know, what's it called, like the German people, very precise people, on time, whatever, that's Yeki. In Hungary, that's where, what's it called, more or less, in Russia and Hungary, that's where Hasidus came, because they're very emotional people. Hungarian people, very emotional, and Russian people, very emotional, right? The Goyim maybe use it in a negative way, but on the other hand, Lithuanian Jewry was more intellectual. Now, not that the plain Lithuanians are intellectual, but the intellectual Lithuanians are intellectual. Okay? Different thing. That's emotional. So every place is colored by the gullus that you're in, and it's very, sometimes very positive, and will bring all these things back. Those are the beautiful colors of Mashiach's donkey. So there are positive things about gullus. Chochma b'goyim tamim, right? That if somebody tells you the wisdom exists by the nations of the world, believe them, right? Torah not. So we can gain wisdom from the nations of the world by being amongst them, but never think that it's Torah. You have to insulate yourself from thinking that you're learning morals and whatever from that chochma, but the chochma can help you in Torah too. You have to learn the chochma of the goyim too from that you learn. That's why the main thing, a Jew should never feel that he belongs in Galus, that he's Havua there. And the Kli Yoker in the end of the Sedra says that when Klal Yisrael, Vayeshev Yisrael, the Eretz Mitzrayim, Vayeachazuba, they like settled in, then all the tzara started. When you feel settled in Chutz Laretz is no good. However, right, that's why Yaakov originally said, Lagur Baretz Bana, we came only temporarily. This is not our place. We're only amongst you. We're not with you. However, right, that is when it comes to how you're influenced by their standards and values and ideas, whatever. However, once you're there, and that's why they lived in Goshen, separate from the rest of... But it says that Yosef gave them fields and vineyards and real estate in Ramses nearby, which was together with the Egyptians. Meaning, true. You have to let the nations of the world know this is not really our place. We're not with you, we're amongst you. But when it comes to the economy of the country, then we're with you. When it comes to patriotism, we're with you. Right? We're legitimate citizens of the country, and more than that, that we're capable of taking care of ourselves. We're not here to live off of you. Jews in Chutz La'aretz should try to be independently able to take care of themselves and not be dependent on the governments where they live. They shouldn't be looked at as parasites. So that's also a positive thing. And the Rashbam says, that's what they said to Paro. They said to Paro, we're only here because we don't have pasture land for our cattle, but we have plenty of money. And the money we'll invest in the Egyptian economy. So don't think that we've come here to take. They were afraid that Paro would think that they came here to live off of Yosef. We have a good, nice, you know, friend in the government, and we'll be able to, you know, live off the fat of the land over here. No, we have our own money, we have our own economy, we'll help your economy. We're not going to live off your economy. It's just we're here because we don't have pasture land for our sheep. That's what they made it a point to say. And And that's why when they came down to Mitzrayim, God said, Yaakov, Yaakov. He didn't refer to Yaakov as Israel, because in Golus, a Jew has to be more subdued. He can't be the Jew who fought with the angels and fought with people and come out as a gibor. He has to be more subdued, more understanding. This is not where we belong. We're living at the grace of the nations of the world, and that's how we have to watch. We have to act and let them see that also. And that's where we have Hatzlacha. In fact, the Sfarno says, it's Dafka Mitzrayim, where the Jew was an abomination because he was a shepherd, that we were so much Matzliach and grew into a nation, not in Eretz Israel, where they considered us princes and looked up to us, right? Sometimes the Jew has to be not so on the top of everything, and that's where we're able to be prolific. And that's why it says Yaakov, Yaakov. Yaakov in Olam Hazeh, Yaakov in Olam Haba, and Yaakov, Yaakov means Yaakov down here and Yaakov up there. It's sometimes we need the things in Golus to reach our perfection. And Yaakov represents the end goal. Right? This is all a means, not necessarily the ideal, but a means to reach an ideal end. And okay. And that's why the Jew in Golus, it says, Yosef presented his brothers as very, very successful businessmen, but not advisors. We're not there to give the Goyim advice, because either way we lose. If the advice is good, right, then they won't give us the credit for it, and if the advice is bad, we'll suffer for it. That's why when Achashverosh asked the Sanhedrin advice, they told him, since we left Eretz Yisrael, we don't have a good advice. Ask somebody else. And Jews should be good citizens, and they should help the economy of the place and be what's it called, patriots, but not stand out where, as Jews, you can be members of the Senate, and but not as a Jew, as a citizen, like any citizen. But once it becomes, that's the Jewish senator or whatever, looking for trouble. And that's why Yosef brought, according to one opinion, the weak of his brothers. We shouldn't look in Gaulis like Giborim, like, you know, we're taking over. We're not, physically, we're not strong. We need the grace of the people we live amongst. We're not strong taking over the countries that we're in. Or he brought the important ones. He didn't bring the strong ones, right? He brought the important or weak ones. Physically, we're here. We depend on your graces. But don't never think that we're not important people. We're important people. And we're going to add to your economies, we're going to add to the respect and dignity of your countries. And that's why he brought Yaakov to bless Paro. We're there to bring a blessing to the people we live amongst, even though we're only living amongst and not with. But in these areas, we can have connection with them. We can learn from their chachma. We can help their economies. We can do business with them. We can bless them. And we can even, what's it called, be dorish their peace and harmony, support their poor, and when what's it called, darkei shalom, to do all the things that a good neighbor does for somebody else. But we're good neighbors, we're not part of the family. We're not with, we're still amongst, but in these areas there can be a connection between our little bubble and the world out there. And same thing goes here in Medinas Yisrael. We're in Golus. And the leaders over here are not necessarily Torah leaders. They're, you know, they're people who are very estranged from Yiddishkeit. We have to deal with the secular society the same way that we deal in Golus. Meaning, we live amongst them. We're not with them. We're in our own little world. But that world has a tremendous connection to the world out there too, where we can benefit from their chachma. They also have chachma. And they also have what's called positive things that we can benefit from. Not Torah. Not their standards or values or morals or whatever, but chokhmah yet. And we can, what's it called, live with them in peace and bolster the economy and not make ourselves look like we are, parasites, living off of them, right? But not, but we do our share too. Our share doesn't necessarily mean that we have to do exact same things as them. But we pay taxes and we're shouldering responsibility, perhaps in our way, maybe different than the way they shoulder responsibility. We shouldn't feel that we are, you know, living off of somebody else and getting a free ride. That's not proper in Gaulis, not proper in Medinas Yisrael also. And Mirtz Hashem, we understand how to live in Gaulis properly, then we'll be zolche to not to need that Gaulis anymore, be able to go back to Eretz Yisrael, and that's where we'll be able to be an Am Levodad Yishkon, the Viaskolot Tzedek, and Hegel.